studio, Bill Maestas, public defender. Welcome to Politics for Pedagogy.
Thank you, John.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about the current situation with the bar exam. There seems to be a lot of stress that has been caused by the February 2025 exam. As someone who served on the People's College of Law Board of Directors, also as an instructor, you have some insight.
Well, what's occurring is the California State Bar, they certify law students to become attorneys through the bar examination, which is a multi-day, very thorough, very difficult examination. California is reported to have the most difficult bar exam. Well, what happened during the February exam was a virtual meltdown of the exam function. Multiple errors, which caused the exam to be critically flawed, such that the state bar is now offering the students of this exam in February to take another exam free of charge. It goes to show, in my mind, that the means to certify attorneys to practice law in the bar in California and throughout the United States is critically flawed by this examination, which appears to have very little rhyme or reason to show the proficiency of any individual to practice law. And even in some states like Arizona, people that are not attorneys are being allowed in some instances to represent other people. I think that California should look at states like Arizona to try to fashion a system where lawyers can be of many types in terms of education. There has to be some way to allow for the representation of most of people with an attorney.
On that note, Attorney Bill Maestas, public defender, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
My pleasure, John. As you know, anytime.
This is John Crumshaw with a special Politics or Pedagogy education report. On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission. KPFK, now in our fund drive. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. Before we get started on today's show, I just want to remind all the listeners that we are in our fund drive, and we'll talk more about this in greater detail later in the show, so stay tuned. I am very excited today to be talking with Suad Abdulaziz, who is a Sudanese-American lawyer and founder of the human rights advocacy organization Decolonize Sudan. Her most recent piece, entitled "The U.S. is Undergoing a Corporate Coup, Sudan Shows How Dangerous It Can Become," is an incredible op-ed that provides profound insight about the situation in Sudan and how that connects to what is happening here in the U.S. So with that, I'm just going to read directly from Suad's op-ed. Suad states, quote, "As billionaire Elon Musk seizes control over vast swaths of the U.S. government, blurring the line between his private business empire and the state, some analysts have begun to call this takeover what it is, a coup. This corporate coup may not look like the military coups we are familiar with, often backed by the U.S. itself, but it is not without precedent. The unfolding crisis in Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo show just how quickly this kind of unchecked corporate power can lead to state takeover and widespread violence. As the U.S. descends further down this path by the day, these examples hold a crucial warning," end quote. So with us today, as I mentioned, to talk about exactly this, how the unfolding crisis in Sudan shows just how quickly unchecked corporate power can lead to state takeover and widespread violence, and how the example of Sudan holds a crucial warning for the United States as it descends by the day down this path of corporate authoritarianism, is our guest, Suad Abdulaziz, a Sudanese-American lawyer and founder of human rights advocacy organization Decolonize Sudan. At Decolonized Sudan, she documents abuses, files human rights complaints on behalf of victims, creates educational materials, and leads advocacy trainings throughout the U.S. Suede works to support human rights defenders in the Global South, advising on issues surrounding surveillance, mass incarceration, and corporate obligations under international human rights law. Suede Abdulaziz, welcome to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you so much, Najwa, for having me. We're honored to be here.
So we are going to dive right in because I have so many questions and there is just so much to share today in this conversation. So first, let's talk about something you discussed in your piece, which is how in 2019, Sudanese dictator Omar al-Bashir, in response to widespread protests in Sudan demanding a regime change, contracted a private militia group, Rapid Support Forces, RSF, as the presidential palace's personal security. Can you discuss how this choice backfired on him and what is the current situation in Sudan?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll just quickly give an intro about my organization, Decolonize Sudan. As the name suggests, we operate from an understanding that colonialism and imperial control persists in the form of neo-colonialism. And this system operates in many ways, through resource extraction, through covert military counterinsurgency and counterterrorism operations, and through economic coercion in the form of blockades, sanctions, and strategically leveraged humanitarian aid, amongst other forms of control. So from this understanding, at Decolonize Sudan, we inform organizing work and international campaigns around Sudan through education and advocacy. So my role is to document abuses, report these abuses, and also to lead advocacy trainings around how to talk about Sudan and demands around Sudan and strategic appeals around Sudan. So for 2 years now, since 2023, when teaching American people about that really had no idea about where Sudan was on a map, let alone what was going on in Sudan, when teaching them about Sudan's descent into the destabilization, the genocide and occupation that we're experiencing today, I relied on this sort of hypothetical in my trainings meant to elicit a kind of inconceivable horror. And that hypothetical was, imagine if Donald Trump were president and began ruling as a dictator. And in response, Americans took to the streets to protest and organize in order to suppress dissent. Trump then, with the help of billionaire Elon Musk, hires Blackwater mercenaries, private mercenaries, to act as his regime's private security. The private militia group then goes on to stage a coup in partnership with the military and deposes Trump. Soon after, Elon Musk and Blackwater overtake the U.S. military, invade New York City, destroy vital infrastructure, and violently occupy much of the country and forcibly displace a third of America's population. So this was a metaphor that was meant to be kind of an abstract nightmare and explain to people what was going on in Sudan. And, you know, now when I bring up this metaphor in my trainings, it is unfortunately a very plausible situation. So what's happened in Sudan is that the former president, al-Bashir, was widely disliked by much of the population. And he had this strategy very early on of coup-proofing himself from the military, because historically, African dictators are the military usually stages a coup, and this is how they're brought down. So he had this strategy of coup-proofing himself by contracting out private militias, so much so that an alliance of private militias was formed by Bashir called the Janjaweed. And the people in the west of Sudan, in Darfur, were very resistive to Bashir's rule. And so Bashir created and utilized the Janjaweed to massacre and suppress resistance, particularly in Darfur. This led to the Darfur genocide. One of the mercenaries who worked his way up the ranks within the Janjaweed decided in 2013 to form his own private militia group. And so the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, was formed. So in December of 2018, Sudanese workers took to the streets in mass demonstrations and called for higher wages, better working conditions, and lower prices on food staples. And these protests were led by a trade organization of unions. And in response to the union demonstrations, al-Bashir hired the RSF as his own private security. And he hired the RSF to quell protesters and brutalize and psychologically break any spirits of revolution through cruel and violent tactics. And the RSF notably in this time massacred, this was the last night before Eid, in the last night of Ramadan in Sudan, the RSF was utilized to massacre protesters that were in front of the presidential palace. And this was one of the largest massacres at that time. And so the RSF was really used to do the dirty work of quelling protests. From February until April 2019, the protest demands shifted from better standards of living to regime change. And the demonstrations expanded into a larger movement in Sudan, all throughout Sudan. In April of 2019, Bashir was overthrown by a coup. So this backfired and he was overthrown by a coup. And this coup was led by the military in partnership with the RSF. Essentially, the military was contracting out again the RSF. So the military quelled mass revolts by promising that military rule was only temporary, and they called it a democratic transitional council. They signed an agreement with many Sudanese civilian leadership that on April 16th in 2023, the executive power would be handed over to civilian-led leadership. On April 15th, 2023, the day before the democratic transition was to take place, seemingly out of nowhere, the RSF militia took over the country, strategically overtook all key military bases, and for the first time in Sudan's history, invaded the capital. The RSF, back in 2020, it was estimated that they were made up of only 10,000 soldiers in Sudan, you know, only 3 short years ago. And so the question that was on everyone's mind is, how did this fringe private group of thousands overtake an established national military made up of millions of soldiers, complete the largest mass displacement happening today, and occupy a country so strategically within the matter of a year? And of course, the answer to this now that we know is that it was able to do so through external backing. Most notably, the United Arab Emirates is the main arms provider and funder of the RSF. And so this is kind of a history of how we got here and how the previous regime enabled this private militia group to expand and eventually take over Sudan.
And just really quick, because I do want to bring this back to how this connects to the United States and actually takes the metaphor that you brought up in 2023 in your trainings, a possible reality, actually no longer just a metaphor here in the United States. But before we get there, just a few quick follow-ups. Can you talk about what is the current humanitarian crisis in Sudan right now?
Of course, this is the largest displacement of a people's happening today. The RSF has and is continuing to carry out genocide and ethnic cleansing campaigns, as well as the largest forced displacement. The RSF terrorizes civilians by occupying and looting their homes. They use rape as a weapon of war and use civilians as human shields. They essentially come and take over the most populated civilian areas, and they have destroyed the most vital infrastructure, power and water lines, loot food facilities and all medicine, and destroy hospitals. Even these areas called emergency response rooms that civilians created in response to the destruction of the hospitals, they destroy those sources of medical care. In the Al Jazeera and their full regions, the RSF are obliterating all forms of life. In Al Fashir village, the RSF recently massacred the largest refugee camp of internally displaced, and they set fire to this camp and the people in it. In the village of Al-Hilalia, the RSF poisoned the water supply and poisoned besieged residents. Those internally displaced, the numbers around that are 8 million internally displaced currently, have typically experienced multiple forms of displacement. So this is just a little about what the people in Sudan are facing. Of course, a third of the population has been either externally or internally displaced. What the RSF very strategically did immediately before taking over is the leader who created the RSF, Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hamidi. One of the very first things that he did was he bought the main telecommunications systems. And so all throughout this massacring of people, displacement, and violent occupation, much of the Sudanese people on the ground were experiencing media blackouts. And so they could not report on or broadcast to the world what was happening to them and who was perpetrating these atrocities.
So now let's actually dive into the Rapid Support Forces and understanding it better as a transnational corporation. One of the things that you talk about in your piece is that Rapid Support Forces, RSF, began as a transnational corporation that dealt in war crimes globally. And as you, again, importantly point out in your piece, that really profits off of war crimes and violence and war generally. Can you elaborate on this and provide some additional background on the RSF as a corporate entity profiting off of war and the RSF's founder and leader that you had just mentioned?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the Rapid Support Forces is a private militia group, and it is a transnational corporation. It was incorporated and created by this man, Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo, aka Hamidi. And Hamidi himself started as a war criminal and mercenary within the Janjaweed and worked his way up the ranks and was one of the key mercenaries carrying out the Darfur genocide within the Janjaweed. So in 2013, he deployed many of his fighters that he had led within the Janjaweed and brought them into his own private militia group called the Rapid Support Forces. It's important to frame that the RSF is a business enterprise that deals in war crimes globally and hasn't been limited to Sudan. They're hired, contracted out in counterinsurgency campaigns throughout the Middle East and North African regions. In 2014, they were contracted by Saudi Arabia to massacre Yemeni people. In 2017, they were deployed by the European Union as mercenary border patrol and essentially killed migrants attempting to make their way to Italy. Again, this was the EU hired them to do this. In 2019, they were hired by the former Libyan military commander, who is now disgraced as a war criminal, to aid in his military campaign targeting Libyan civilians throughout Libya. So this corporate entity, the RSF, is one that goes to the highest bidder. It doesn't have any state alliances. And again, it is largely made up by non-Sudanese forces and is led by a non-Sudanese war criminal. From 2023 onward, the majority of the fighters within the RSF are hired mercenaries from outside of Sudan. And so Hamidi will go into impoverished regions throughout the neighboring countries like Chad, like Uganda, like South Sudan and Ethiopia, and hire in mercenaries to join the ranks of the RSF for sometimes thousands of dollars, the most money that these people have ever seen. And so this is kind of the makeup of the RSF. It is a corporate entity that hires its fighters.
Okay, so now let's bring it back to the United States. And you connect what is happening and is happening in Sudan with what is happening here in the U.S. Can you talk about how Elon Musk is coordinating a corporate coup in the United States, similar to actually what the Rapid Support Forces founder and leader, billionaire warlord Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hamidi, has done in Sudan?
A lot of what Hamidi was doing from 2019 to 2023 was preparing to take over Sudan. He was meeting with key government officials, forming alliances with authoritarian governments throughout the world, and was positioning his private troops within populated regions in Sudan. And of course, like I said, bought out the main telecommunications infrastructure. So Musk is very alarmingly positioning himself to conduct a government takeover. He has bought out a critical communications infrastructure with not only buying out X and flooding X, you know, formerly Twitter, with disinformation, with hateful disinformation, but also with his buying and expansion of Starlink, which now owns the majority of the world's satellites. And so controls very critical communications infrastructure. Starlink, and of course, Musk subsequently created a subsidiary called Starshield that contracts with militaries all over the world, and most notably just recently contracted with the U.S. military for billions of dollars, and has a lot of control of military communications infrastructure. This should be extremely alarming to those who, you know, want to live in a democracy here in the U.S. And he has effectively seized federal spending, just like Hemeti did in 2023. Musk has, you know, created this Department of Government Efficiency and is using it to consolidate his control, and is using kind of his private empire to gain influence throughout executive governance within the U.S. So the parallels are extremely alarming and are something that we living in America should be pushing back on and very keenly aware of the risks here.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we are talking about how the unfolding crisis in Sudan shows just how quickly unchecked corporate power can lead to state takeover and widespread violence, and how this example of Sudan holds a crucial warning for the United States as it descends by the day down this path of corporate authoritarianism, with our guest Suad Abdulaziz, a Sudanese-American lawyer and founder of human rights advocacy organization Decolonize Sudan. Before we get back into the conversation, I just wanted to take a moment to talk about the fund drive that we're in right now for KPFK. As you know, we are 100% community sponsored. We take no money from any sort of corporate entities. That gives us the opportunity to really talk about the issues that are affecting the world from a place of truth and not from a place that's influenced by corporate greed, that's influenced by ulterior motives. Rather, we have the opportunity through being community funded, through listener support, to really be able to deliver programming that is speaking truth to power. And we want to be able to continue to do that. And in order to do that, we really need your support. You can make your pledge to kpfk.org/donate, or you can call in at 818-985-5735. Please, if you appreciate what we're bringing to you all as listeners, if you appreciate what we are about and what we're trying to do every day in collaboration with you all, please make sure to donate. Once again, you can donate at kpfk.org/donate. or call in at 818-985-5735. And it is through listener support that truly allows us to be independent and hopefully make change through being able to convey and dialogue and talk about the truth.
Friends, this is how our truly public station raises the funds to keep the shows we all enjoy and rely on to inform and educate us on the air. But in addition to making donations to the station, I want to encourage listeners to become dues-paying members of KPFK for as little as $25 a year. If you are a friend of our show or others, or if you listen to KPFK on a regular basis, I invite you to get involved by becoming a KPFK member or by joining our Sustainer Circle. And as those numbers grow, the number of days and weeks we spend in Fund Drive will indeed shrink. Have you contributed to KPFK this year? If not, or even if you have the means to make a donation, large or small, I ask you to make one now by logging on to kpfk.org or by calling 818-985-5735. Over 80% of the funds needed to operate our collective community radio station comes from fellow listeners like you.
So I, again, encourage you, please donate kpfk.org/donate or 818-985-5735. Now let's get back into our discussion so we can continue to deliver the kind of programming that you all come every day to listen to and hear and be a part of. Saad, I have so many more questions, but we're obviously not going to get to them all because time is running out. But I do want to make sure to get to this one because I'm sure some of the listeners are wondering, how is it that these corporate entities like Rapid Support Forces and even corporate entities like Musk's corporate entities, like Eric Prince's former Blackwater, now called Academy, I believe, as well as the American private company UG Solutions, which has been contracted actually to be used in Gaza. How are these corporate entities able to commit what are essentially war crimes or violations of law or do things that are in violation of even international law? How are they able to do this legally? And can you talk a little bit about how these entities exist in a legal gray zone and why it's critical to confront this legal black hole to stop corporate authoritarianism, including to stop it here in the United States as we descend into it day by day with Musk?
Yes, so the use of private militias contracted by the U.S. for counterinsurgency operations and to massacre and commit atrocities abroad is nothing new. It has a long history. And the most notorious of these private militia groups, Blackwater, which is run by a man by the name of Eric Prince. It's since changed names to many names. I think it's currently known as Academy. Blackwater operates black sites and torture camps all over the world, and most notably was utilized to invade and destabilize Afghanistan and Iraq. So this is all abroad. Trump is currently in the middle of making a deal with Eric Prince to create a private militia group that would work domestically. And this private militia would make arrests of American people and run domestic and international military bases where Americans would be shipped off to, calling them processing camps. This should be extremely alarming to us. You know, not only the use abroad, but that the fascism abroad is literally coming to roost domestically with the use of private militia groups here. Corporate militia firms are frequently described as private security or bodyguards, but they're not. This is misleading. They are not a small force. They use military training and weaponry to carry out critical functions that would have been done by soldiers in the past. Notably, Elon Musk has his own deputized private security force. They were deputized by the U.S. Marshals last month, and this gives his security force many powers of the state. And why do state officials and corporate officials use private militias? These private militias serve a number of purposes. One, they offer the deployment of military forces without the risk of losing political capital. For example, Trump was able to have U.S. forces invade Gaza while still keeping his campaign promise that troops would not have to worry about getting deployed. And he did this by contracting a private militia group, UG Solutions, who now have over 400 soldiers in Gaza. And the use of private militias by states also most notably acts to shield states from liability and from public scrutiny. Their operations are secretive, and there is no way of requesting records from these entities. And of course, there is a legal black hole of international law. There are currently no hard law obligations of corporate entities. The International Court of Justice cannot hear cases involving private corporations accused of genocide, human rights violations, or war crimes. And the ICC can only prosecute individuals and has historically focused on prosecuting African state officials rather than corporate executives or entities. So there is no clear international legal mechanism. And also there has been this trend of shielding corporate interests within the domestic legal system. So the use of private militia groups is something that is a threat to international humanity.
Thank you so much, Saad Abdelaziz, for joining us, a Sudanese-American lawyer and founder of human rights advocacy organization Decolonize Sudan. I want to thank our fantastic engineer, Ozzy. All of you, the listeners, thanks for joining us every week. Our theme song is the overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife for KPFK Los Angeles. I'm Negwa Ibrahim, wishing you all light, love, and peace. Thanks for joining us, and have a great rest of your Sunday.
benefits of donating your used vehicle to KPFK include funding new and existing programming, as well as increasing